Cursive writing will be required in Illinois schools next school year. The legislature there overrode the governor's veto last week. People who praise cursive writing say we needed to sign checks and important documents. Think about how many signatures are needed on a mortgage. And they say we needed to read historical documents. But opponents say it's a non-essential skill and schools are dealing with much more pressing issues. It's a conversation about cursive on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Virginia Berninger is a professor emerita of educational psychology at the University of Washington, where she conducted National Institute of Child Health and Human Development funded research on developing writers and writers with learning disabilities. Virginia, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, lawmakers in Illinois recently passed a bill that requires elementary schools to teach cursive writing. What was your reaction to this mandate?
Well, I'm glad you're joining many others. As I understand it, you will be the 25th state. We're halfway through now with states deciding to teach it again.
So why is it important to teach it?
Well, in the research that we did, and we compared printing, cursive, and keyboarding, and we found that the cursive was the best for spelling and for composing. Apparently, the connecting links of the letters help to link all the letters together in a word that helps with spelling, and also if you can, you know, link your letters and spell better, you can compose faster. So there was an advantage, at least in grades 4 to 7.
And there's also this claim that we need to write cursive throughout our lives. How factual is this?
Well, there certainly are, historically, ways that people have generally used cursive as, you know, signing checks, signing our names in general. However, what we recommend is what they do in Australia. They teach the printing, they teach cursive, and then they let children choose which they prefer. So it's important that they learn both kinds of format so they can recognize it in others' writing, but they can choose which works best for them.
How did the introduction of the Common Core curriculum impact cursive writing?
Well, I think what happened is the people writing that assumed because we have computers that we weren't going to need much handwriting instruction anymore because everyone would be using computers. But actually, in schools, most of the instruction and activities is still in hand with handwriting. Some schools have computers for the children to use, but in general, at school, they're expected to do handwriting, so it makes sense to teach it.
Are we seeing a decline at all across the country in the teaching of cursive, and when is it taught, if it is still taught?
Well, it varies from place to place. There are still some places that are teaching it. Many have, of course, stopped, except there's now, like I said, 24 other states that have reintroduced it and are teaching it. So historically, printing was introduced in kindergarten, but then it was taught in first and second grade. Then cursive was introduced in third grade and taught third and fourth grade. And we actually have research that shows that is a sensible way to do it, that there's some benefits for doing the printing first, and it helps with the word reading because printing the letters helps the children perceive the letters in the written words, and that helps with their reading. Most of what we read is in manuscript or printed form. But then, as I said, we found the cursive had advantages.
And explain a little more, what are the advantages of cursive, and what does the research indicate?
Well, as I had said before, the connecting strokes in cursive help link the letters together into word units, and that helps spelling. And the cursive helps you go faster. Cursive was invented before we had typewriters to help with the speed of handwriting. So if you can write faster, that's going to help you compose more words faster than if you have to go more slowly with printing.
We're talking right now with Virginia Berninger. She is a professor emerita of educational psychology at the University of Washington, talking about cursive being taught in schools. And the impetus for this conversation was last week, lawmakers in Illinois overrode a governor's veto, passing a bill that requires elementary schools to teach cursive writing starting the next school year. You can join this conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you a teacher? Do you think it's necessary to teach children how to write cursive? Why or why not? How do you feel about state law mandating that cursive be taught in schools? Do you think this is a good idea or not? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring in Eugene, who joins us from Biola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. I started teaching in the early 1960s, and I taught Palmer penmanship. I still got all my Palmer material and also all my Spencerian. And I remember my mother and my stepfather's penmanship. And both of them only went probably about as far as the eighth grade, but their writing was good. What Palmer does, if you're going to use Palmer, you move your whole arm. You do not move your fingers. And not only is Palmer better, and it's faster, and it teaches hand-eye coordination, pretty much. And Palmer is just the only way to go.
Well, thank you, Eugene. Virginia, talk a little bit about the Palmer method.
I must say I'm not familiar with that. I am familiar with the Zehner-Bloser method. In our actual research, we taught a form of, I think it's sometimes called ball and stick, but we taught it with specific strategies that often are not used. I'm glad to hear that Palmer works so well. There may be more than one way to teach the cursive that works.
So
but it's important that it be taught.
And Eugene is saying he also sees that the hand-eye coordination and keeping the hand and the writing instrument on the paper at all times, that there is something that is going on in the brain that can really help.
I think he's right. We know that hand acts, things we do with our hand, can have a connection to the thinking part of the brain. If you think of the Rodin sculpture with the thinker, that prominent role of the arm and hand on the forehead, which is where our brain is right on the inside, and actually some of the brain research we did, handwriting, once we're using it to spell words, has a direct connection with what we call the cognitive portal of the mind. So he's right that that connection is there.
And so when we see that there are benefits, why have schools stepped away from cursive, gone away from it?
Well, as I said before, there's this widespread belief that now that we have computers, we don't need handwriting. And I think the other thing is some of the people who make the policy in Common Core think there's so many things to teach. How could they possibly have time to teach handwriting? But what we've actually found is less is more. You don't have to spend an hour a day teaching handwriting. If it's taught appropriately, 10 minutes a day, as long as it's taught daily, can be very helpful in learning handwriting. And the other thing that we've learned in our research, we never teach handwriting for just the sake of handwriting. We teach handwriting, and then we teach transfer of handwriting to spelling and to composing. So they get to see the utility of using handwriting, and then there is time to teach all the other things they want to teach.
And we're talking right now with Virginia Berninger. She is a professor emerita of educational psychology at the University of Washington. Talking about cursive this hour, you can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Did you grow up writing in cursive? Do you think there are some advantages to knowing how to write in cursive? How important do you think it is for children to know how to write in cursive? A letter to the editor in Freeport, Illinois said, quote, if you examine the strokes required for cursive, there are several major time-consuming additives. The pen rises on some letters, falls on others. We're discussing, and we'll continue right after this news. Lawmakers in Illinois recently passed a bill mandating cursive instruction. They overrode the governor's veto and joined more than a dozen other states that require penmanship classes. The law requires cursive instruction by fifth grade for Illinois students starting in the 2018-2019 school year. We're talking through the cursive debate on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With us is Virginia Berninger. She is a professor emerita of educational psychology at the University of Washington. Your thoughts on learning cursive at 800-642-1234. Should states legislate cursive? Is cursive taught in your schools? Teachers, is a mandatory curriculum on cursive necessary or not? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Richard, who joins us from Loganville. Hi, Richard.
Hello. I had an experience the late 50s when I was in the first grade. My aunt and my first grade-to-be teacher went to a seminar the summer before I was her student to recognize dyslexia in kids. She saw that I was using the stroke up and down in the circle strokes with my left hand. I would get to the middle of the page, and I would switch to my right hand. Somehow she figured out, and she went to her colleagues, and she figured out that I had dyslexia, and she saw that through the teachings of cursive. So I thought it was kind of an interesting caveat. So,
Thank you, Richard. Virginia, go ahead.
Well, certainly some children with dyslexia have handwriting problems, but to diagnose dyslexia, which is a problem in word reading and decoding unknown problems and spelling, one would have to give normed tests. There are procedures for doing that. From what you describe, the switching of hands, and you were in first grade, you may not yet have established your hand dominance, which is not unusual. Generally by first grade or the end of first grade, all children have established a dominant hand for writing. But it sounds like you had not yet at the beginning of the year, at least. And one other thing, you mentioned left-handed, and unfortunately, many handwriting programs do not provide enough assistance for the teachers on how to teach left-handers to do handwriting. It's not exactly the same as right-handers. I have a colleague, Dr. Beverly Wolf, and she's a national trainer, has been for many years on handwriting, and she has many ideas that she recommends to teachers for helping the children who are left-handers. They are presented in a book I wrote with her that Paul H. Brooks has published on teaching children with dyslexia, dysgraphia, and language and math disabilities. I can't speak. I wasn't there to this gentleman's situation.
Sure.
If he didn't have word reading problems, I'd be hesitant to say it was dyslexia.
Well, Richard, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Zoe, who joins us from Madison. Go ahead.
Greetings. One of my sons was learning disabled and could not spell for love nor money. 18 out of 20 wrong was par for the course for him. In the third grade, he taught himself calligraphy. And when the teacher allowed him to take his spelling tests in calligraphy, he would get 18 out of 20 correct.
Hmm.
Is this a left brain, right brain thing?
Well, I can't speak to it being left brain, right brain, because actually, you know, from having been involved in brain research for 20 years, they're no longer looking at things as left versus right because there's so much happening in both the left and the right side of the brain. But what you describe about the handwriting, because with calligraphy, it's like an art form for the handwriting, that and it often involves cursive. That helps many children with dyslexia, as I mentioned, to link the letters together, and that helps them with their spelling. And it also helps them with the recognition of the letters and remembering the letter order in the words. So I'm not surprised that the calligraphy helped him with his spelling.
Hmm. Well, Zoe, thank you so much for calling in with that observation. And staying on the topic of calligraphy, I know that when we get a particular card in the mail, I show it to my kids and say, look at this letter. This is art. Where does the artistic aspect of penmanship come in, and how does calligraphy fold into this conversation?
Well, calligraphy, as you say, is an art form, and many people don't realize that Steve Jobs, before he went into computers, was a calligrapher, and that's why we have so many fonts to choose from in our word processing programs. So calligraphy is just a way of forming letters that is beautiful and artistic, and people are passionate about it. Some of my colleagues who teach special ed are calligraphers, like, well, retired Ruthann Topping. And she just loved calligraphy, and it translated into a passion for teaching handwriting to kids and helped a lot of kids.
Let's go to Mary now, who joins us from La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I also support teaching a standard method of communication, written communication. I, too, am old enough to have had the Palmer Method. In fact, I still have my little Palmer Method booklet that I used in school. But one recent example is I was at the pet store, and I was getting new fish for my aquarium, and each container a fish has a different number. And when the young man that was putting my fish in the plastic bags stapled a little piece of paper to, it was a little form, to each bag, and each fish had a different number. And when I got to the checkout, the girl that was checking me out to enter the numbers in the computer said, I don't know what number this is, and she was guessing. And when you guess, it's not always correct. And so she had to go back and figure out what that particular fish's number was, and so it held up the line. And everybody now, my children also were not taught penmanship, and it's always bugged the daylights out of me, because when you make up, everybody then has to make up their own method of writing, and it doesn't necessarily work for being able to communicate.
So cursive creates some order in the world, Virginia.
Yes, and so does manuscript form. But this lady introduces the important idea of handwriting for numbers. And so often when handwriting is taught, it's taught for letters of the alphabet, and that's good, but it's also important to teach how you write your numerals. to use in your arithmetic and math courses. And we see clinically children who are having trouble with math, and when we look carefully what's going on, they can't write the numbers legibly and automatically. And that interferes them with their math performance, as this woman has shared.
And so when you are taught the writing the numerals in cursive, is it just being able to do those numerals over and over, the act of the brain doing that over and over, does that then transfer over to helping in math?
Well, there's two important things in writing alphabet letters and the numerals we use in math. First, they have to be formed legibly so other people can identify them. And secondly, they need to be formed automatically. You have to learn them and practice them, you know, over the course of a grade so that you don't have to stop and think each time how to form them. You're forming them the same way each time, automatically, and that frees up our brain mind to do the thinking part, be it reading or math.
Well, Mary, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Jerry now in Glendale. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I went to grade school in the 1950s. Two comments. One is the school I went to was a parochial system, and there was a rather rigid form of the Palmer method that was used. I think it's important that you have some structure, but you also have flexibility for the student to develop their own way of using cursive. Our system was rather punitive for students that didn't strictly adhere to the Palmer method. And the second point, which is even worse, I remember several of my classmates wrote left-handed, and they were forced to stop writing left-handed and write right-handed. And I'd like to have your experts comment on that rather severe forcing of students to change the way that they wrote.
Well, I certainly support your view that individual students should have some flexibility in how they do their writing, as long as they're legible and recognizable by others, and they can use them for their learning. There are slight variations in how any one letter can be formed and still be recognized for a particular letter, because the name that goes with it, even if there are variations, is a way that we identify it. And it is not considered good practice anymore to force left-handers to write with their right hand. We know about 11% of children are naturally left-handed, and they should be allowed to use their left hand for handwriting, and we should adjust how we teach handwriting for the left-handers. I'm sure you have seen the comedy routines of George Carlin about that era when things were very rigid with how handwriting was taught. And while it's important that the cursive was reintroduced, we certainly want some flexibility in how it's taught and how students are allowed to use their cursive.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for calling in with that remembrance and that question. Virginia, why do we see states getting involved legislatively here around this cursive issue?
Well, it's legislators and actually state departments of education who are making these decisions. And in education, legislators and state departments of education are currently setting policy for what should be taught in schools. And going back to that era of the 50s and 60s and even 70s, before these national standards, individual school districts would set up their own curriculum with scope and sequence. But we have moved into an era in which at the state level and even in some cases national level, they are trying to dictate to schools and educators what they teach, when they teach it. I'm not saying I agree with it. It's what has happened. And I personally think that educators should have some professional autonomy to use their best professional judgment about things, just like doctors and lawyers and psychologists do. But currently, government people who aren't necessarily trained as educators are dictating what the school should teach when.
Well, a caller from Janesville couldn't stay with us. He said his handwriting got so bad that nobody could read it, so he switched to printing. He also wonders why physicians have a reputation for poor handwriting. What correlation exists there?
Well, what was his first point?
His handwriting got so bad that he switched to printing.
Right. That's what I mentioned about teaching. Students should be taught both formats so they can at least recognize those forms when others produce them. But then they should choose. And it sounds like the one form worked for him and the other one didn't. And that's okay.
And then he also said, you know, we live with this kind of notion sometimes that you can't read a physician's handwriting.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Where does that
one
come
thing
from?
Is have a look at what, okay, have a look at what they're trying to write. And it's usually names of drugs. And these are not 1, 2, 3 syllable words. I think a lot of them come from Latin. I'm not sure about that, but they're very long, hard to spell words. And there are people who have actually looked into that question. And what they find is physicians would say, well, I'd rather have people think I have poor handwriting than poor spelling.
Huh.
And at one time, California even had remedial handwriting for the physicians. But that said, doctors are rarely writing prescriptions for medication anymore because everything is now computerized in the practice of medicine. So the doctor's handwriting hasn't been a big issue in recent years. There's other issues with the use of computers, but not handwriting.
We're talking about the big cursive debate that got extra fuel on the fire in 2010 when many states adopted the Common Core state standards, which require keyboarding skills but not penmanship. We're discussing the place for cursive as a core competency in childhood with Virginia Berninger. Is it essential or not? What do you think? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. When were you taught cursive? Do you still use cursive writing, or have you gone away from it? If you're a teacher, is a mandatory curriculum on cursive necessary or not? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. Do kids really need to know how to do those fancy cursive letters to succeed in life? Critics say teaching cursive takes up time and resources better spent on other things. But advocates say, hey, you still need to sign checks and be able to read historical documents. We're unpacking all sides of the great cursive debate on this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Virginia Berninger stays with us. She's a professor emerita at the University of Washington, where she researched developing writers and writers with learning disabilities. Let's go to Troy, who joins us from Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello, good morning. I just want to point out something that most of these callers that have been calling in are a little older. And I really definitely believe if you were to, like, interview millennials and people that are younger that are actually currently in school, they would tell you clearly, hands down, that using a laptop is way more effective and they can get a lot more done. I have 4 children, and they're in elementary school even, and they get assigned a laptop. They can type more faster than somebody can write in cursive, and it's more practical. And I think about jobs. Like, who doesn't carry a computer with them and actually type notes and do all those things through their computer now? And it saves on time. And I think it gives the teachers more time to teach kids, like, how to compose stories. And kids at a younger age are now able to do that because the time is saved by, you know, whether their penmanship was good or not.
Well, Troy, thanks so much for that observation. Virginia, what do you think?
Well, a lot of our research involved comparing children when they printed, they did cursive, or they used the keyboard. And we found that up to about 5th grade, they did better with the handwriting than the keyboarding. And around 6th, 7th grade, things got better using the keyboard. And we think that's because when you do touch typing on a computer, you use both your left and your right hand. And it turns out the brain has connections between the left and the right side, and those don't get fully, they don't start to really mature, get the myelin around them, so they're more efficient to about ages 11, 12, early adolescence, the transition into early adolescence. So in terms of touch typing, there may be advantage to introducing the handwriting instruction around 5th, 6th grade for using the computer keyboard. The other thing we found is a lot of kids were hunting and pecking. They weren't doing touch typing because the schools don't generally teach the touch typing. And so some of our research, we actually taught the touch typing, and they could learn it, and then they did better with their keyboards. So I think, you know, it's one of those things. Kids will learn what they're taught. And, yes, I'm not going to give up my keyboard either. But in what we've been writing and talking about for about 2 decades now is that we have to develop children who are hybrid writers. Teach them the printing so that they can recognize printed material in books. And a lot of what we see on the and word process documents is more manuscript than cursive. Teach them the cursive because of the advantage for the spelling and the composing I mentioned, but also teach them the keyboarding. And not only that, teach them the use of our technology tools for the kind of assignments they're given for both homework and a lot of long-term written assignments that you need to do in middle school and high school to graduate. And now that annual tests are generally given with computers. So teach them the keyboarding so they can do well on those annual tests.
Well, Troy, thanks for calling in. Let's go to Terry now in Amro. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I'm just wondering, kind of piggybacking off of that, how much time should a teacher, kindergarten and preschool teachers, be spending on formation of letters for printing? I'm hearing from some kindergarten teachers that they feel like they don't have enough time to teach the good formation.
Well, I can tell you what we did in our research for 20 years about. We teach each letter of the alphabet once in a lesson. And we in a different order each time, and we have a strategy that we use numbered arrow cues, and we name the letters, and we hold them in our mind and close our eyes and then write them from memory. And that whole procedure takes about 10 minutes a day. So it doesn't have to take up a lot of teacher time. And then we transition into composing or spelling and composing. So the children learn that handwriting's a tool. We don't do it just for handwriting's sake. We do it because it helps us spell our words and share our ideas.
Well, Terry, thank you for the call. Let's go to Michelle in Green Bay now. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning. I just wanted to share that I'm the mother of two children. My son recently graduated from high school, and my daughter is a sophomore in high school. And they go to they've gone to a good school program. And I see vast differences between the two of them in their abilities with penmanship. My son can print, and they both can print, but my daughter brought home a note from a teacher and had me read it to her because it was in cursive and she couldn't read it. So somewhere between those ages, I feel like cursive kind of got wiped out in our family, and I don't know if I didn't realize it or what, but I didn't help reinforce that, and I'm really disappointed now that my daughter's going to be 16 years old and she can't read recipes in our family. Or cursive, a note from grandma, a note from a teacher in cursive. And I don't even know if all the educators realize that, but it's off my daughter's radar. She is not capable of reading it, and she almost looks at it as irrelevant. So it made me sad that happened, and I don't know how I can go back now and teach it to her, but somewhere along the lines, she cannot do it, but my 18-year-old son did grasp that from the instruction he was given.
Virginia, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That reminds me of a teacher who was in the audience once when I was giving a talk, and she was just adamant, we must teach cursive, not even if the children don't use it for their own writing, but so they can read what other people have written in cursive. And they write a lot of things in cursive beyond just signatures. And so you make a really strong case for why cursive should be taught so that we can read various things like recipes that are written in cursive. It reminds me, in Seattle, some of the high school students staged I don't know what you call it, a sit-in. They took very strong stance and demanded, these are high school students, demanded that the teachers teach them cursive. They wanted to learn it and felt they had been deprived of something. So, again, good points that this mom is sharing.
Well, Michelle, thank you for calling in. Let's go to Jack in Milwaukee. Hi, Jack.
Hey, good morning. Great show, thank you.
Sure.
So my comments are around maybe as this skill might kind of manifest itself in later life. And many years ago when I read the book, one of Jack Welch's books, he really emphasized that he would do handwritten notes to a lot of his general managers. And the notes contained, results for the quarter and maybe some inspirational coaching. And there's many samples of these letters in a lot of Jack's books. So that actually inspired me through his kind of beautiful handwriting and that talent to do something similar, whether it's in note cards or thank you letters and even just general correspondence. So it's a nice skill. I think that has manifested itself well and fits very well in the business world as well, despite all the technology that we have.
Oh, interesting how it fits into the business world, Virginia.
Yes, yes. Writing isn't just used in school. It's used in the world of work. In Pittsburgh, there is a woman, Karen Shriver, who has specialized in learning about writing in the world of work and preparing students and then people in the work world for writing. Excellent examples from this gentleman of why we really need our handwriting. We use it in so many ways while we work.
Well, Jack, thank you for calling in. Jody is now with us in Menominee. Hi, Jody.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
Good, good. Yes, I have I am really excited about this call because I have been concerned about this for quite a while, that they are taking cursive out of the schools because just of the future generations, that if I'm more concerned of a threat situation where, you know, whether, you know, it's people who that would know the curse, but do know cursive, that would write letters in a threatening way, whether it's for our country or for schools or public places, and, you know, hand over this letter or send this letter, and it, here it would be in our own language, and people wouldn't know how to read it.
Hmm. Jody brings up a national security interest in cursive. Virginia.
Well, it's a good point. I haven't had any direct experience with national security and using cursive, but it makes sense to me.
Well, Virginia, as we wrap up the hour here, can you give us some final thoughts on where you see cursive headed in the future?
Well, I don't really have a crystal ball, so it seems like Wisconsin is the 25th state, so now half of the states have reintroduced it after originally taking it out, and my prediction is other states will join that movement, and I think it will survive. I think it's important, and I don't know what's going to come next. We've had a lot of focus on state standards and Common Core at a national level, and I think there is some pushback among some educators.
And we'll have to leave it there. Virginia, thanks for being with us. Virginia Berninger is a professor emerita of educational psychology at University of Washington, where she conducted National Institute of Child Health and Human Development funded research on developing writers and writers with learning disabilities. This hour of the morning show was produced by Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.